Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. Today I'm joined by Kathy Rensenbrink, books editor at The Bookseller, who's going to talk to me through a trio of novels. On our reading list we have The Versions of Us, the debut novel of Laura Barnett, I Saw a Man by Owen Shears, and finally A Fortunate Age by Joanna Rakoff. That's all to come here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Welcome to the show, Kathy. We're going to begin with Laura Barnett's debut novel, The Versions of Us. It's a love story about two Cambridge students, Eva and Jim, but it's told through the vehicle of the parallel universe. In this novel, there are three different narratives, all hinging on a single moment during the protagonist's student days at Cambridge. Can you tell us a bit more about this interesting structure?
Yes, I love the structure of this novel. So our characters are called Eva and Jim, and in 1958, they're in Cambridge. Eva's on her bike and she swerves to avoid a dog and crashes into Jim. And then the story splits into three different possible ways that it goes. And in each of the versions, they have a relationship of sorts, but you never know quite when they're going to meet each other. So in one version, they sort of instantly are attracted to each other and go off and have a drink, and it develops that way. And then in the different versions, the things play out. And of course, it's so interesting, because in films, Sliding Doors was very much that sort of plot line. Kate Atkinson's Life After Life followed the same thing as well, one character living multiple lives. And I think people really like those, because I think one of the things about reading it is it encourages you to examine your own what-if moments. So it's got quite a lot of word of mouth behind it, anything like that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's quite unusual to have three separate narratives. I mean, we're used to stories that hinge on one moment but have two separate parallel universes. This has three, and it offers a kind of a new dimension.
Yes, I thought that was interesting. And within the story, there's also, so Jim is an artist, and again, in the different versions, he has differing levels of success. And in one of the versions, there's also a work of art that he paints of Eva, a triptych, so it's three different bits. And I think that's, again, when that started to happen, I began to see the novel as a sort of a literary triptych.
Right, interesting. The novel kind of relies on the interaction between these three characters. So we've got David, Jim, and of course, mm-hmm. Eva. What did you make of the characterisation of those three, those kind of key players?
Yeah, I thought they were good. I mean, to a certain extent, Eva is the really interesting one. And in all the storylines, she tends to be enthralled to one of the men, and to a certain extent you kind of, I don't know, a couple of times I felt they didn't quite come up to her weight. What's interesting is in the different versions, so she's a writer, and again in the different versions she's more or less successful, and sometimes she's playing second fiddle to one of the male characters, and sometimes she's the more important one, having to navigate the fact that, you know, her husband's annoyed because she's getting lots of attention and he's not. So I found that all very fascinating.
Yeah, kind of that interplay between love and creative work is very strong, because they're all kind of creative types, I think you can broadly say.
Yes, artist, an actor, a writer.
Yeah, and it challenges that idea that, you know, love is kind of all-consuming, really, because they do have these kind of, there's a tension there between their creative work and their love.
Well, it is, and I think that's another interesting bit about the novel, isn't it? Because it's the whole thing about romantic novels, you know, the story ends when the couple get married, whereas actually this is a book that the stories begin with marriage, pretty much. And then the impact of marriage and motherhood on creativity is another big theme. But I think also what happens to a relationship when it's subjected to the pressures of, you know, not very much time, possibly not very much money, and the couple having warring needs.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to ask you, did you find it problematic that we have Eva, this very intelligent woman, but we never have a parallel universe imagined without a man? She's always kind of attached, as you said, kind of enthralled to one of the two main men. Did you find that problematic?
I didn't really. Part of me as a feminist once say, yes, I did. I'd have liked to see a storyline where she just took over the world and didn't care about love. But actually, I do think we all care about love, don't we? Most people's lives are actually dominated by search for a relationship, you know, a union. That's how most people do feel that they're going to be most fulfilled. I mean, possibly wrongly. But yes, so whilst that part of me sort of thinks that, I remember always thinking that, you know, wouldn't it be nice if romantic novels, you know, they didn't get married at the end, but the woman actually just decided to go off and be a missionary or something. But probably pretty unlikely.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. And was there one of the particular threads that you preferred? I mean, did you get to the stage where you were thinking, oh, I really want to read just this one, and this was my favourite?
Narrative. I didn't, and I thought that was very cleverly done, because I think the problem with any novel where you have different narratives, so you know, if you've got like several characters going on or each telling a story, the problem always is that you quite often prefer one of them. So going back to the other one can feel like a bit of a bore, but I didn't feel like that. I enjoyed them all. I think I enjoyed it really is a sort of a meditation on chance and destiny, and I like the fact that the storyline that looked kind of like started off, you know, you do root for Eva and Jim, I think, as the couple all the way through. So the story that starts off most positively to them doesn't necessarily develop in that way. And again, I thought that was quite clever. It's quite a hopeful book because it sort of makes you think, well, even if things aren't quite going my way now, it kind of shows that swings roundabouts. Yeah, something will pop up.
Yeah, it does kind of make you believe in fate and coincidence, doesn't it? Yeah. Did you get the feeling that fate was on their side in one sense? I mean, did you think there's kind of a benign force dictating everything?
Well, that's an interesting question. No, not really. And I just sort of like that idea of the one unifying, or the one meeting that's the point of ignition for everything else. And I don't think I'd read this before. I think I later found on that in film terms, apparently that's called the meet cute. That's an expression for when the girl swerves on her bicycle to avoid a dog and crashes into a man. You know, the moment when Hugh Grant spills his coffee over Julia Roberts in Notting Hill. It's that sort of setup from which things develop. So then I thought that's quite nice. So the book opens with a meet cute and then develops in different ways. It definitely is quite a filmic book. So I can see it being made into a film.
Yeah, I think the rights have already been sold, or for a TV programme or a film. I mean, you can definitely see this working.
Yeah, and one of the joys of it as well is, you know, the locations are glamorous, the descriptions of the clothes are all very nice, all that sort of stuff, the, you know, actors' parties in New York, journalists in Paris, all that sort of thing. So I do think that, I think that helps you go through a book, doesn't it, when you're enjoying all those details as well.
Absolutely. Laura Barnett's The Versions of Us is out now, published by Weidenfield and Nicholson. Now we're turning our attention to I Saw a Man by Owen Shears. The book follows the life of Michael Turner, who moves to London after the sudden loss of his wife. He then develops a close friendship with the family next door, but a catastrophic event changes it all. Cathy, the book starts very much in medias res, really, with a first scene that really grabs you as a reader. What did you make of the opening?
I don't think I'll give away what happens, should I? Because I think it would ruin it for the reader. But I thought it was very good. And you know straight away, you know, he really goes out boldly to say, you know, the event that changed everybody's life happened on this day. The narrative is quite cleverly done, because what happens is he goes over to the house next door and finds the back door open. He's just taking back a tool he's borrowed and the door is open. So he just kind of steps into the kitchen. Then he realises nobody's home. That she finds confusing, and he continues to walk through the house. And then this walking through the house is sort of threaded in with the backstory of how he came to be in London, how he lost his wife. So that's all nicely done. You're kind of walking through the house, telling the story. So it's all very rhythmic. The author's a poet, and I think you can tell that. And I don't want to put people off either, because sometimes I, you know, when people say, like, oh, the author's a poet, I do worry that the language might feel slightly hard work. And it isn't that at all. But I just feel that there's a rhythmic quality to this book.
That's really interesting. I mean, as you say, some poets really don't make good novelists, but this seems to work. And as you say, there's that rhythm where you're kind of finding out the backstory as he walks through the house, and there's kind of
I think he's a really good storyteller. I think he also writes plays, and you can see that as well. He's a very good storyteller, and the book is entrancing as the reader. You just want to carry on, you know, walking the story and finding out what happens.
Right. I mean, yeah, as you say, there's a lot of suspense in the story in parts. It feels like as tense as a full-on thriller sometimes. Do you think Shears kind of manages to balance the tension with the story itself, which is actually quite sort of subtle and thought-provoking?
Yes, I think he does. I think the themes that are in play are guilt, whether, you know, innocence, how we take responsibility for what happens. And again, like in the first novel, but possibly more with an added darkness, the way that fate takes a hand. And so his wife is a journalist. She's pretty much retired from going to dangerous places. She decides to go on a trip and then ends up being the victim of a drone strike. So lots of interesting stuff about drones and the fact that they are spoken about as being unmanned, but apparently the people that operate them, even though they might be operating them from a desert in Nevada, they know when they're killing people, and that takes a toll from them. So I found that quite interesting, because that was a whole area that I hadn't really thought about and didn't really know about.
As you say, there are drones. There's also the subprime mortgage market in the US. I mean, it's very much rooted in our time.
Yes,
in a way.
Josh the neighbour is a banker working for Lehman Brothers. So again, as the reader, we know that's not going great. Yeah. You know that before the narrator does, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. Absolutely. I mean, I was going to ask about this, sort of going back to this idea that, you know, it's the suspenseful novel. Do you think, yeah, is there some tension between the suspense and kind of, as you say, the emotional side of it? Because it is quite a sad story in a way.
Yeah, I think the suspense and the emotion work really well. If I had Quibble, I think he's a very good storyteller, but I almost think you could do with a little bit less story. Right. So I think probably, so I found the drone stuff really interesting, but I think that one of the characters, we kind of detour into the mind of one of the characters, the man who was manning the drone strike that killed his wife. And I'm not sure whether, I don't know, it'd be interesting to have read the novel, I think, without that subplot and seen how it was. So I thought the suspense and the emotion sat extremely well together. And if anything, but I am very picky and I always want books to be shorter. And my red pen finger does sort of twitch with everything.
Oh, really?
So it may well be that if you took it out, it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be quite as good or as rich. But that would be the thing that I'd try and actually I'd take out. But, you know, again, sounds very picky to complain that there's too much story.
Yeah, exactly. I Saw a Man by Owen Shears is out now, published by Faber and Faber. Finally, let's talk about A Fortunate Age, a novel by Joanna Rakoff that tells the story of a group of graduates transitioning into adulthood, and more broadly about a generation finding its way. Cathy, what did you make of Rakoff's debut novel?
Well, I thought this was really interesting. The reason why, so this was written a few years ago and has only just been published in this country, and the reason why it's been published in the UK now is that her memoir, which is called My Salinger Year, which is all about being an assistant in an agency dealing with J.D. Salinger, was really successful. So therefore, obviously, now her novel has been published. And it's fascinating because it's set in the 90s, late 90s in Brooklyn. It already feels like a letter from a lost age, like a book from a long time ago. But I must say, I really enjoyed it. It's a direct homage to The Group by Mary McCarthy, and I think she says that in the acknowledgements. And there's lots of comparisons on the plot points. One of the things I find fascinating about it is I think it's probably the last portrait of young people growing up in New York without social media.
Yeah.
So it really sits in that. If you imagine a shelf of books with The Group on, but also with sort of HBO box sets, you know, Sex and the City and Girls. And you kind of think, I think this deserves a little place on that shelf. New York social history.
Yeah, I mean, is that what you mean when you say that it's kind of a letter from a lost age, that it doesn't have all these mod cons that we now think of?
Yeah, it's amazing. Such a short time ago, and yet it feels so different. And the way that then, you know, I quite enjoy things I think about self-obsessed young people, but it's so interesting to read. And they're all graduates of Oberlin College, which, of course, Lena Dunham and a lot of the cast from Girls, I think, a lot of the characters and Girls are graduates from Oberlin College. So that sort of feels interesting. But yes, comparing it to something like Girls. So it really does help you see how social media fuels self-obsession in young people. Well, in all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the lack
even
of
at my great advanced age.
I guess the big question really is put forward by the title in many ways. Are we supposed to see this as a kind of a fortunate age, or is that to be taken with a massive pinch of salt, do you think?
I think it is. Well, it's most of the book happens pre 9/11, and then it does do that. I think it nicely shows these very privileged Jewish graduates. They're all very kind of like scornful of, you know, the corporate stuff and money. But then as the book goes on, they gradually kind of think, well, you know, it would probably be quite nice to be, you know, they sort of slightly corrupt. Some of them, they get married, they have children. So I'm making it sound a bit depressing. It's quite good fun. It's fun. It's well written. She's a really good writer. It probably is a bit of a period piece and a bit of a curiosity almost already. But I must say I enjoyed it, and I would recommend it. I'm really interested to see what she writes next, because her memoir also was excellent. So it'd be nice to see. I'd be looking forward to reading her next novel.
Fantastic. A Fortunate Age by Joanna Rakoff is out now, published by Bloomsbury Publishing. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Cathy Rensenbrink, thank you very much for joining me. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. The producers were Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Ben Rylan. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll be talking film. Until then, goodbye from me, and thanks for listening.